From Camp Hill to Connellsville, Whitehall to Hollidaysburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, public sector labor unions are beginning to comply with the Supreme Court's ruling upholding the constitutional right of workers not to be forced into paying money to keep their jobs. David Taylor is joined by David Osborne and Steve Bloom for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And having failed to gain legislative approval for much of his policy agenda, Governor Tom Wolf is now issuing executive orders. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. A resolution introduced into the state Senate calls for a study of fire and emergency management services due to the declining number of volunteers. Rural fire departments are having an especially difficult time finding enough members to provide full service. Finding adequate funding and time for required training adds to the woes of many volunteer fire departments. According to the Center Square, a 2018 report on the problem resulted in 23 recommendations. Those recommendations have not been implemented, and the current Senate resolution seeks to jumpstart action. Perhaps wanting to follow in the footsteps of Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, another part-time bartender has launched a bid for Congress. Christy Gribbis, who works full-time as a teacher, is seeking the Democratic nomination to run against incumbent Republican Congressman Mike Kelly in the 16th District, which includes the city of Erie and most of northwestern Pennsylvania. Kelly survived a tough battle in a Democrat wave election 2 years ago, but national Democrats have placed his seat high on their target list. The 16th District produced strong results for President Trump in 2016. He, of course, will be on the ballot again next year. The Pennsylvania Bar Association has recommended 3 of the 4 candidates seeking 2 open seats on the Pennsylvania Superior Court. Not earning the bar's stamp of approval was Democratic nominee Amanda Green Hawkins, who is rated as not recommended. Recommended by the bar were Republican nominees Krista Lee Peck, who serves as a judge of the Court of Common Pleas in Cumberland County, and Chester County Assistant District Attorney Megan McCarthy King. Also earning approval from the bar was Democratic nominee Dan McCaffrey, who sits on the Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Last year, the Supreme Court of the United States issued a ruling in Janus v. AFSCME that upheld the constitutional right of public sector workers not to be required to join or otherwise pay money to a labor union as a condition of employment. Unions have made exercising that right difficult, but after lawsuits filed by the Fairness Center, some are now complying with the high court's ruling. Here with the latest developments are our Capitol Watch crew. David Taylor is joined today by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation and by David Osborne from the Fairness Center. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. In the studio with me today, Steve Bloom, Vice President of Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you for having me, David.
So, you know, we are in the midst of, an important time, a shift in society where, you know, that for decades we've had these bureaucrat unions, these public employee unions, really put a chokehold on the operations of our government, where, you know, you have the bureaucrat unions controlling the institutions of government as if it's their private property. And so now we are, you know, this has been rolled back, that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in a decision regarding Mark Janus versus AFSCME. He was a public employee in Illinois, that in fact individuals do have rights even when they're members of these bureaucrat unions, and that they cannot be compelled by the state to support causes in which they do not believe.
Yeah, and why this is so important, along with the constitutional issues that were decided in the Janus case, public sector unions, government worker unions, have really seized a disproportionate amount of the political power, especially in a state like Pennsylvania, where at one time We had one of the highest proportions of unionized workforce of any state, and in particular, some of the largest numbers of public employees that are in government unions of government workers. And they've taken on an extremely important role in setting the policy agenda for decades in Pennsylvania. And gradually, they've tilted the playing field in favor of government sector union priorities that are often exactly the opposite of the taxpayers' priorities.
Right, exactly, because the government employee unions grow more powerful when government grows, spends
Anytime
more
government
money.
Anytime government grows, it helps bolster their roles. They get more members. They're paying more dues. They have more political influence because of the revenue they get from their employees who are members of the union. They utilize a lot of that in political action, literally trying to change the legislative agenda, and often very successfully.
Yeah.
And so they're pushing for more spending, higher taxes as a result of that, regulations that hamper and discourage businesses from investing in Pennsylvania. All the things that the average Pennsylvania wants to see thrive, in many cases, the public sector unions are working against. So we've seen this happening for decades, and the Janus case is part of a shift that's now happening in our culture where the power of these public sector unions to dictate the policy agenda is finally starting to be eroded.
Well, and that's why to elaborate on this point, I'm so pleased to welcome our special guest, Dave Osborne, President and General Counsel of the Fairness Center. Dave, thanks for taking time to be with us on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dave. Steve, how are you doing?
Good.
So one of the questions here about the Janus rights and public employees is that this Supreme Court decision is not like self-actualizing. You know, states have to respond. People have to actually vindicate these rights, you know, in the respective states. And this is what's happening now in Pennsylvania, and this is what your organization is working on.
Well, we're working on that on behalf of clients, and you're absolutely right. Whenever the Supreme Court decides a case, all they're doing really is deciding a case. It's not Congress. They're not making law. So let me give you an example. When the case involving the gay marriage ban, Obergefell versus Hodge, was being decided, the Supreme Court was looking at several state laws from across the country. When they decided that case, those particular state laws were overturned. But there were state laws on the books in many other states that still had to be litigated over. So in fact, in many of those instances, people had already filed suit to have those bans invalidated. And after the Supreme Court decided Obergefell, the courts in these other states had to do their work to apply Obergefell to the laws in their states. What hasn't been done in Pennsylvania or in many other states is Janus has not been applied to the state laws. So Pennsylvania still has state laws on the books called fair share fee laws that have not yet been struck down.
And one of the key things about people who are public employees being able to vindicate these rights, that the unions have different machinations to keep people captive. Actually, you know, Steve, our friend Steve here is a recovering politician. You know, back when you were a legislator, one of the bills that you sponsored was the right to quit.
Exactly. Hmm. And these union contracts, often they're 3-year contracts, and they have a window of about 2 weeks at the very end of the 3-year period in which an employee can resign. Otherwise, they're literally trapped by law in the union for the entire duration of the 3-year contract. And if they want to resign, they have to go through a complicated process during that 2 weeks. If they fail to do everything technically in compliance with the contract, they still can't quit. And so right to quit is a huge deal for the freedom of workers in Pennsylvania.
And so, Dave, can you explain what maintenance of membership is and like how it relates to this ability of individuals to vindicate their rights?
Sure. What we're talking about is sort of the next phase after Janus. So Janus involved a lot of principles like freedom of association, freedom of speech. But unions have very narrowly read Janus to apply only to individuals who have chosen not to be members of the union. That is, those folks who are non-members don't have to pay a fee to the union. Well, what do you do with folks who are members of their union? The union has said the unions in general have said that that Janus does not apply to that situation. That they so the next obstacle for these particular members is how do you get out of the union in the first place in order right. to exercise your Janus rights?
Right, right.
Maintenance of membership is one of those obstacles, Dave. One of those obstacles that was created back in 1970 to keep people from resigning their membership in the union and becoming a non-member. So I guess, Steve, that was what you were looking at.
Exactly.
When you were following
and I had legislation, I think, for two consecutive sessions on right to quit. It didn't become law, but it was part of the push to educate people on these issues. And now we're finally starting to see the actual change taking place where, especially due to the great work of folks like David, we're finally seeing the freedom being restored to these workers, and they're no longer necessarily trapped in their union contracts. And well, we're talking about like 330,000 government union workers who are members of the unions in Pennsylvania. And so you're talking hundreds of thousands of people mm-hmm. being trapped and having their constitutional rights essentially squelched.
Well, I think our clients would have appreciated that bill, Steve, but at least a couple of courts have already said that it would be unnecessary.
Now
because,
it's not, right.
Because the First Amendment – should allow people to resign from their union at any time. This is even years ago, Steve. There was a case involving turnpike workers here in Pennsylvania. The turnpike workers wanted to get out of their union. They worked with an organization called National Right to Work in order to do that. And when the union put up a fight, the Right to Work filed for an injunction to stop the union. And the court ended up holding that these folks have the constitutional right to quit, as you might put it, and that they can exercise that at any time because nowhere else do we allow the government to keep people from changing their minds.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and our special guest, Dave Osborne from the Fairness Center. So Dave, what is happening? Are there unions that have actually backed down, recognizing that they're no longer in compliance with the court rulings and that they're loosening their grip on members? Or are they going to – is everybody just fighting this to the bitter end?
Well, I said that some of these cases had been filed prior to Janus and some time ago, but no case has reached the merits. The unions have settled those cases out in an attempt to get rid of them. What happened after Janus is that union members started coming out of the woodwork. And in particular, they started coming to the Fairness Center. So we provide free legal services to those who've been harmed by public sector union officials. These folks came to us and they said, hey, we tried to get out of our union. The union said, I couldn't leave. Is that right? And we said, well, as a matter of law, we're on the cutting edge. So we filed lawsuits on behalf of these members. We've filed by now it's 9-10 cases mm-hmm. over this particular issue. And the net effect of that, Dave, has been to force at least three major state government unions to relinquish maintenance of membership as an item in their collective bargaining agreements, either immediately. In some cases, they did it immediately. In some cases, they promised to do it in the future, and in fact, have shown courts evidence of that.
Which unions are these?
So SEIU Local 668. That's a big one. The Pennsylvania State Corrections Officers Association, and UFCW, the United Food and Commercial
Workers.
Now, I have to say, I'm not sure that our clients should believe them. We may have gotten some immediate relief for our clients, but I'm skeptical that union officials are going to abide by those promises.
This goes to core First Amendment freedoms mm-hmm. of freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of conscience, because as the court ruled, that the activity of these unions is by its nature political because it goes directly to those questions about the size and scope of government and how much of the private economy it consumes.
And it's important that you have on the one hand at the Commonwealth Foundation, we work on the legislative front. So we're working on legislative policy to make sure that union members are aware of their rights, that government sector union members know that they now have – they can't be forced to be a member of the union or pay dues to the union or mm-hmm. fair share fees to the union even if they're not members. But we also – because of the nature of the situation, the litigation work is also very important. So what the Fairness Center does also helps to advance the cause of freedom for Pennsylvania workers. And I think it's important to note, and David, maybe you can explain this, you're a public interest law firm. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean to someone who's disgruntled and has been wronged by their union leadership?
Well, yeah, the IRS has basically accorded a special place in the code just for organizations like ours. We're a 501c3 organization, nonprofit, but we're called a public interest law firm. That means that we are allowed to conduct charitable activities by filing cases, as long as those cases are not only in an individual's interest but also in the public's interest. So certainly we litigate for our clients. We put our clients first. The IRS also requires that the issues that we litigate be big enough to have an impact on other people. And that's where you're right, Steve, that these cases are important. In this particular instance with maintenance and membership, you've got individuals who stood up, but when the unions ran away from maintenance and membership in these three instances, it actually affected about 22,500 people. 22,500 union members are now free to leave.
Well, and what's important here, mm-hmm. Above all things, is that with the freedom of association, this is how we have accountability for these private political organizations, mm-hmm. which is what these bureaucrat unions are. They're private political organizations, and that now when members have a right to leave and to not associate themselves with these groups and their activities, this is how the leaders of those unions become accountable. Because when people are captive and they have to join or they have to pay money and they have no choice, then this is what this is what brings about like really reactionary politics, because there's no accountability. And so having the accountability of, if we don't do right by our members can leave, that hopefully this will lead to, a more balanced, more reasonable kind of politics.
And even in – we're sitting here more than a year now after the Janus ruling, and yet in Pennsylvania, one out of three public sector union members doesn't even know that they have these rights. Mm. And so another important piece of the work that needs to be done is simply informing our public sector union members that they have these rights, mm-hmm. making them aware. We have legislation that's pending that's passed through the House Labor and Industry Committee right now in Pennsylvania that would simply require the government to tell its union members that they do have these rights. And you would think that would be a no-brainer, but the unions are resisting that.
Right. I mean, especially when you think about how many other workplace postings are required by state and federal law to inform people of their rights, why would
– Right. And we're not even talking – keep in mind, we're not talking about private sector workers or private sector. We're talking about people who work for the government.
Yes.
The government is the employer.
Yes.
The government is typically the one telling people they have to notify citizens of their rights. And yet here the government is resisting the simple requirement of telling workers, hey, you have the right not to have to pay dues to this union.
Yeah. Well, and this, of course, brings us to the next step in the process, which is that, if that those kinds of very worthwhile bills would pass, that Governor Wolf, that his biggest funders have been these public employee unions. And so it's doubtful that we can get any of those things signed into law while he is in office. But of course, the point is for legislators to champion these causes, get these bills passed, and that when there's a governor who will be open to these kinds of reforms, that we can get them enacted at that time.
And even if this bill reaches the governor's desk, simply notifying workers of rights that they already have doesn't seem like it would make a lot of sense for even a governor opposed to restricting the public sector unions from signing. So I think there's a chance that Governor Wolf would do the right thing and simply sign this bill that acknowledges existing law as dictated by the Supreme Court.
Well, he also might do his usual trick of passive-aggressively allowing things to become
right.
law without his signature.
Which has happened on occasion, and it could possibly happen again.
Well, there's also another route. So some of the cases that we filed for our clients involve an argument that they're entitled to due process. And whenever there's a right, like a First Amendment right, and the government is standing in the way of exercising that right, they've got a responsibility to facilitate one's exercise of those rights. This happened actually with unions some time ago, even when public sector employees were required to pay fair share fees. The Supreme Court came along about 10 years after that and said, well, if they've got an obligation to pay it, at least you've got to help them opt out if they want. And
it's worth this is just one of my personal pet peeves here. The so-called fair share fee, what is that exactly?
Well, it's a thing of the past now, at least according to the Supreme Court. Again, the law is still there on the books in Pennsylvania. But the fair share fee was something also known as an agency fee. It was a required payment that a non-member would have to make to a union even though they weren't members.
Right.
And it was supposed to reflect the cost of collective bargaining, some of these sort of core union activities.
Yeah. But the excuse was, well, people shouldn't be free riders. And of course, that ignores the fact that the unions went and got the law changed so that they could have exclusive representation. Mm. So it's like they get the law changed to say, we get exclusive representation, and then they go, oh, well, you know, we got these people who don't pay and they're free riders and they mm-hmm. should be forced to pay.
And they shouldn't be allowed to quit.
Yeah.
They should be forced to stay in whether they want to or not.
So the point I was trying to make here is that there is some element of due process here that should require the government, which includes the public sector unions in this instance, to notify people of their rights, to provide an opportunity to exercise those rights, and to provide access to an independent decision maker when there's some sort of an issue with the exercise of those rights.
So what are next steps? I mean, where do things stand, and what developments is the Fairness Center going to be advocating for, helping clients to achieve? What do you think is the next turning point in this saga?
Yeah, well, let me be clear. Nothing has changed in the law. These three unions may have run away from maintenance of membership, but I think that's because the union officials are terrified that they're going to get struck down by the courts. These cases are still filed in court. Our clients still want a ruling on the merits. That's the only thing that will truly protect them from union officials changing their minds. And that's what we're going to continue to fight for, our clients.
Because people's rights shouldn't be at the whim of someone else's discretion. Mm-hmm. They say, well, I choose in this instance not to violate your rights. That's not good enough.
Well, there are whole doctrines built around this in the courts that we don't have time for, but you're absolutely right.
Outstanding. Well, this has been, as always, a very enlightening time with you. Dave, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and the Fairness Center and the work that you're doing?
Go to the Fairness Center's website. It's fairnesscenter.org.
Outstanding. Steve, where can people find you online to learn more about you and the Commonwealth Foundation?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. From Steve and me, thanks again to our friend Dave Osborne. Thanks to all of you for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. I've got a pen and I've got a phone, and I can use that pen to sign executive orders and take executive actions. Those words were spoken by President Barack Obama, who, frustrated by dealing with a Republican-controlled Congress that did not share his policy goals, proceeded to push the constitutional boundaries of executive branch authority. It is a tactic Governor Tom Wolf has adopted with gusto in recent months. Facing the same governing paradigm as the former president, Wolf has seen a Republican-controlled state legislature frustrate his goal of turning Penn's Woods into a template for the ultra-left-wing policies being espoused by the bevy of candidates seeking the Democratic presidential nomination. Back around Independence Day, the General Assembly adjourned for a long summer recess. Wolf seized upon their absence to begin issuing a string of executive actions that clearly would stand no chance of coming for a vote, much less being enacted into law by the legislature. The assault on Second Amendment rights hit high gear in early August following mass shootings in Texas and Ohio. The anti-gun left never lets a tragedy pass without ramping up the rhetoric, and Wolf added action to their words. He signed an executive order creating a new special counsel on gun violence and created new deep state bureaucracies to develop ways to curb gun rights. Wolf next aimed his pen at Pennsylvania charter schools. Having received millions in campaign contributions from the state teachers union, Wolf simultaneously repaid a debt, and struck a blow for the left's crusade to keep all students in government schools by putting onerous financial restrictions on charter schools. The governor placed a new financial roadblock in the path of those seeking to start new charter schools. Then he essentially began charging charter schools to have the State Department of Education collect from school districts funds due to them by law. But the biggest overreach was yet to come. Earlier this month, Wolf began his attempt to embroil Pennsylvania in something called the Global Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or RGGI. RGGI is a multi-state compact whose stated goal is to address what the left perceives to be man-made climate change by reducing carbon emissions. The tactic is essentially a cap-and-tax proposal, which would place strict limits on CO2 emissions from power plants, requiring them to pay state government if they exceed those limits. The impact of this will be a new tax on power generators, with the money collected going to subsidize economically inefficient renewable energy sources like solar and wind. It should also be noted a fair portion of the new tax revenue will be diverted to public transportation. As such, it is yet another transfer of funds from Pennsylvania's rural counties, which don't have large public transit systems, to Philadelphia and Allegheny counties. Given the fact power generators have already been reducing CO2 emissions by developing and adopting new technologies, RGGI is an ineffective solution to a non-existent problem. Radical environmentalists love programs like RGGI, so Wolf wins points with his base by attempting to implement the program. And it is just an attempt. Given that RGGI clearly levies a new tax, legislative leaders have cried foul and will attempt to rein in the governor's regulatory excesses. This, though, is something at which the Republican legislature has not been particularly effective. Recall last year, the state Supreme Court took away their power to draw congressional district lines, but lawmakers balked at taking the one step to reclaim their constitutional authority, that being impeachment of the offending justices. Like a kid who gets away with snatching cookies from the cookie jar once, Wolf will continue abusing executive power and trampling on legislative authority until someone stops him. The problem is he and his labor union allies purchased control of the state Supreme Court a few years back, so any case that ends up in front of them is likely going to turn out in the governor's favor. But there is one thing Governor Wolf should remember. What can be done by executive order can be undone by executive order when the next governor takes office. Just ask Barack Obama how much of his legacy has been undone by President Donald Trump. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WNTP-AM and WFIL-AM in Lafayette Hill, along with WLSH-AM in Lansford, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.